Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Iowa blues man Kevin Burt has a new album coming out tomorrow. It's called Stone Crazy, and I will talk with him. But first, Harry Smith has had a long career in news. He worked for CBS News for a long time. He hosted CBS morning programs, The Early Show, and its predecessor CBS This Morning for 17 years. Since 2011, he's worked for NBC News. He grew up in Illinois, and he went to Central College in Pella. He is returning to his alma mater virtually to give the keynote address at Called to Climate Action 2020, Uphold and Upheave, on October 24th. The event is sponsored by Iowa Interfaith Power and Light and Central College, and Harry Smith is on the line with me now. Hello, Harry.
Oh my gosh. Is this really happening?
I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
We've been talking about this for a while.
It has been a while. And then we were going to get together when you made it back to Iowa, but a pandemic struck. So you haven't been back for quite a while.
It kind of gets in the way of stuff.
Everything. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Everything. Well, let's talk about what is bringing you virtually back this time. And of course, over the years, working in the news business, you've covered every kind of news story, but you do seem to have a particular passion for environmental news. Tell me about that.
Well, I'll tell you what, the roots of this really were, I read the Iowa newspaper still a lot, pretty consistently, and happily subscribe to them, pay for that journalism. And sometimes when I'm driving, I listen to Iowa Public Radio on my public radio app. So years ago already, when the Des Moines Water folks brought their suit against the three counties in northwest Iowa, I started to look into it, and I said, "What is this about?" And how, just doing my due diligence. And over the years, then, I kept thinking, well, we had a magazine show at NBC, and then we didn't, then we did, and then we didn't. And I thought this could be an interesting story to do. I've started calling around. I talked to people from the Union of Concerned Scientists. I talked to folks at Iowa State. Really started talking to Emily Heaton up at ISU. And finally, last year, we did a story with Matt Russell, who is from Iowa Interfaith Power and Light, about sustainable agriculture and carbon sequestration. And the next thing you know, Matt says, "Well, will you talk to our group at Central College this fall?" And I said, "Sure." So that's sort of the genesis of all of that, and stuff that I've been paying a lot of attention to, say, over the last half dozen years or so.
Well, and let's go back in time a little bit more. You as a journalist, me as a news consumer for a while, and then as a journalist, as we saw reporting on climate change developing, there was an interesting turn that it took when this issue became politicized. And for a long time, scientists were getting equal time with climate deniers. Mm. Whenever you'd read a piece or see a piece on television, it would be almost split, where you'd listen to someone who had dedicated their life to research and understanding, and then someone else who said, "Hey, they don't know what they're talking about."
Right.
It's such an interesting story, and how it has been removed from the people who understand it best. What are your feelings about that?
I think that your question was so brilliantly stated, because the last survey I saw, in terms of actual scientists and people who work in climate science and should know about this stuff, I think the percentage was less than 1%. Is it possible under 1% are in the climate change denier group? Even if it's 2% or 3%, we're talking about this massive preponderance of opinion and science data that says this is what's actually happening. And yet, because of sort of the atmosphere we're in, this kind of, atmosphere we're in, That I agree. That's we've always done or often done this. Well, we think you're full of baloney. And I one of the things that I talk about a lot, having gone to college in Pella, is when I went there almost 50 years ago, if you got a letter postmarked in Pella, it said, come to the Tulip Festival the second weekend in May. Well, years ago, they moved that Tulip Festival to the first weekend in May. And because of climate change and because of the weather variabilities, there are some years when it snows. But there are a lot of years when there are only stems there in the first week in May. Mm. And this is about climate change. This doesn't take algorithms, and it doesn't take giant charts, and it you don't have to look at melting ice caps. This is a thing that happens in our lives on a daily basis and is really observable by everybody. How about a derecho, right?
Right.
Like these things, I'm sorry, I get carried away.
No, it's interesting too here in Iowa because of the politicization of climate change, we are in an interesting situation. We have farmers, people who work with the land every day, who are living with the effects of climate change every day and are mm-hmm. seeing and experiencing those changes firsthand. And yet, perhaps their politics get in the way of really taking any action to try to slow that down or talk mm-hmm. about how serious it is.
Yeah, which to me, one of the things that's brilliant about Iowa Interfaith Power and Light is, you know, let's just get together for a cup of coffee and talk about some of this stuff. And it's, it's a donut rather than a hammer. To say these are the things these are the things you have to pay attention to. We're going to open up the tent flap here, invite you in, and let's just try to have a conversation about this stuff that we deep down realize we may in fact be part of the problem. How can we together get together and figure out ways to mitigate it?
Well, and that's an approach, these kinds of conversations. That's something that I've seen you gravitate toward many times in your career. Again, you've had to cover everything.
Yeah.
But when you get to choose what you do, you seem to really love to give people an opportunity to communicate in an open way. Can you tell me more about what you try to do with your journalism?
Yeah, I guess just personally, the idea, and listen, Lord knows, in the troll verse that we live in, there's no way to do anything in quote-unquote correctly anymore. But I've always thought, at least to the idea of, okay, for instance, I just finished writing a piece. We were up in the Boundary Waters in Minnesota 2 weeks ago. And a lot of people in Iowa realize, like, this is one of the great, great resources in all of America. It's 1 million acres of pristine forest, streams, and lakes, more than 1,000 lakes. Lakes you can dip a little tin cup into and drink the water without fear of anything. It's that clean. It's that amazing. And for instance, during the Obama administration, there's been a lease for a mine on the edge of the Boundary Waters for years and years, decades and decades. And the Obama administration basically put a stake in the heart of that. And within days of the Trump administration taking over, they said, you know what, we're gonna get this lease process up and running again. And we went up there, we talked to the people who've lived up there forever, who treasure this resource, but we also talked to the people who are, you know, constructing the mine. And we talked to union people up there, too, because in the United States of America, you know what? It's too expensive for people to live. And those kinds of union jobs that have actual benefits, that you don't have to worry about taking your kid to the doctor because you don't have the money to pay for it. All those issues come into play in a lot of these stories. So we just try to tell as much of the story as humanly possible. At the same time, you know, I think my heart is on the side of let's keep the If it's possible to keep it clean, keep it clean, and let's lean toward the idea that cleaner is better.
Do you find that in this trollverse, as you called it, we have seen the American people lose a lot of confidence in the free press, and a lot of that has come from the president, who has cast all kinds of doubts on journalism in this country and done a great deal to undermine trust in journalism. Do you find that people are less willing to talk to you? Do you feel like they trust you less, even face to face?
Well, I'm not particular. I don't think I seem particularly dangerous to people. On the other side, I think what you said is true, because, we're the lying media. You are part of that, and I'm part of that. But it's so much deeper than that. There was a really good informative piece on the Today Show this morning by Kate Snow about suburban soccer moms who are deep in the wormhole of QAnon, right? This is a much more complex universe that we're living in, that where people decide that this is a thing I'm going to ascribe to and everything else be damned. So what you said was true, but I think it's more complicated and, quite frankly, worse than that.
We are going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Harry Smith.
You want me to stay for another segment?
I do, please. You promised not to hang up on us, I've heard. So
I'm not going to hang up in here, but here's the other thing. I want to know more about the Iowa blues man and how that's not an oxymoron.
All right, it's coming up. Coming up at 10:40, Kevin Burt. All right, with me is Harry Smith. He works for NBC News. Before that, he was at CBS News for a number of decades, and he grew up in Illinois. He went to Central College in Pella. He's returning to his alma mater virtually to give the keynote address at Call to Climate Action 2020, Uphold and Upheave. That's coming up on October 24th, sponsored by the Iowa Interfaith Power and Light and Central College. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, blues man Kevin Burt. He's got a new album out tomorrow. It is what you need in 2020. I promise you that. Harry Smith is here with me now from NBC News. He grew up in Illinois. He went to Central College in Pella. He is returning to his alma mater to give the keynote address Call to Climate Action 2020 Uphold and Upheave Conference. That is a virtual event on October 24th. And Harry, you have taken some inspiration for the keynote address that you're going to be giving from an old hymn. Tell me about that.
It's interesting because Matt Russell and these folks from Iowa Interfaith Power and Light, a lot of what they're trying to accomplish comes, this is an actual sort of faith-based initiative, right? And so I'm not a particularly public person about my faith, and I grew up in what now would be described as an evangelical household. Back then it was even more, I think we believed, called it fundamentalism. And it's evolved since then and is probably difficult to describe dogmatically. So when I was first approached, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm the right person to be representative. And Matt said, oh, no, you are. And I started to think about my own roots religiously. And this old hymn came to mind that we always used to sing at Thanksgiving time. called For the Beauty of the Earth, For the Beauty of the Earth, For the Beauty of the Skies, For the Love from which our birth over and around us lies. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our joyful hymn of praise. And so it's for the beauty of the hour, for the day and of the night, hill and vale and tree and flower, sun and moon and stars of light. For the joy of human love, brother, sister, parent, child, friends on earth and friends above, for a gentle thoughts and mild, for a gentle thoughts and mild. For all these, to thee we raise this our joy, our joyful hymn of praise. And this was one of those hymns that I remember loving to sing. And when you try to think back as you're trying to scratch through all the hard drives in your memory to say, well, why do I feel or think the way I do about certain things? And this thing just popped out of nowhere. And I thought, wow. I mean, you listen to the words of that hymn, that's pretty easy to ascribe to. And if we had that sort of attitude collectively, then maybe we would make a little more progress. That's my thought.
I talk to a lot of farmers, and I have talked to a lot of farmers over the years. And one of the things that I find really interesting, you know, I've talked to organic farmers, and I've talked to conventional farmers, and I've talked to people all along the spectrum, and there is a broad spectrum. It's not just black and white. But one of the things that I have found is that the farmers that I talk to all have so much more in common than they have not in common. And and when farmers sit down and talk to each other, even if they have very different approaches, usually there's a lot of respect there. And yet we have this idea that there's a battle line drawn between conventional agriculture and sustainable agriculture. In doing your reporting about sustainable agriculture, the story that you did with Matt Russell, who is not just with the Interfaith Alliance, but also runs Coyote Farm or Coyote Run Farm in Marion County, which is a sustainable farm. Tell me about your feel for sustainable agriculture and where it falls in the business of ag.
Right. You know, I wonder sometimes if it feels like to me, and this is just opinion, I don't have like data to back this up, but from farmers I talk to, it feels like, well, this is how we farm. And the government, you know, says, well, if you want crop insurance, then you've got to do the same thing you did before. This is a certain sort of bureaucracy and a certain, well, you know, they call it monoculture now. But this is how we do stuff, right? And one of the things we talked about in the piece we did with Matt Russell last year and with Emily Heaton from Iowa State was this notion of, well, you know, if you're doing some of these more progressive in terms of earth-friendly things, it's hard to get paid for it when you get to the elevator, right? Like, who's going to pay you for that? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, listen, there's been talk, I mean, years ago already in the Iowa legislature, they said, well, we need more money for conservation efforts, right? Well, there doesn't seem to be anywhere.
And no mandates either.
Well, sure, no mandates. So it feels like it's almost like this is a culture that there's a bureaucracy involved in it. There's a loyalty to it, and I'm not really sure what the answer is to say, well, you know what? Well, listen, we also listen when we're out there with Emily at Iowa last year with Iowa State, we're looking at these things like simple stuff like prairie strips. I mean, if you had thousands and thousands of acres, how much of a difference does it really make, you know, in the end of the day of your bottom line to say, we're just going to go ahead and do some of this stuff because we know it's good for habitat and it's good for the water that comes off the fields. You know, I don't know how that transformation takes place where people start to pull away and say, you know, okay. Because, listen, when I went to school, when I first started coming to Iowa in the 1960s, what was it? It was a quarter section, half section. People had pasture. They rotated crops. they grew oats. You know, there was just all these different hedges, and it was a way, it was in its own way at its times pretty sustainable. And now you don't see a single farm that looks anything like that anymore. So I don't know how we get, if there's a way to get back to that sort of ideal sense of an American Gothic kind of, we're the good stewards of the land kind of ethos of farming, I guess is what I'm rambling about at this point.
Well, as I was mentioning, talking to farmers, I mean, I also talk about policy, and there just seems to be this rift between people who are living a life and doing a job and people who are making the decisions about the agricultural economy and what gets encouraged and what doesn't get encouraged. And, you know, all of those policy choices, there seems to be a much greater rift than there necessarily is on the ground.
Yeah. And listen, in the end of the day, if this is the way it's done and this is the way I'm going to get compensated, what is the incentive to take a risk to do something differently, right? So, yeah, and by the way, this is because these farms are so gigantic, the amount of capital that's at risk all the time is, I mean, this is no joke. This is serious investment.
I'm talking with Harry Smith of NBC News. He will
And you're tired of talking to me.
I am not. I'm reminding people of who you are, just in case they don't recognize your voice instantly. He will be giving the keynote address at Call to Climate Action 2020 Uphold and Upheave on October 24th. It is a virtual event sponsored by Iowa Interfaith Power and Light and Central College. And you have been in the news business for a very long time. You moved over to the NBC network in 2011, and I know that what you went to NBC to do didn't necessarily last very long. How much control do you have over the kinds of stories that you get to tell at this point in your career?
It's a kind of a blessed mix. So I was talking about sort of misinformation and disinformation earlier, and I pitched a story to Sunday Today yesterday about that, and they said, oh, yeah, go do that. We pitched the story to the Today Show to go up to the Boundary Waters. They said, yeah, go do that. I pitched a story the other day. We went up to New Hampshire to talk to oyster farmers. And oysters, I don't know if you know much about oysters, but they're amazing animals, right? An adult oyster filters 50 gallons of water a day. Can you imagine, right? So they're oyster farmers, and they've gotten rocked by the pandemic because so many restaurants have closed down. And so the Nature Conservancy came in and said, you know what? We're going to buy millions of dollars of your two big oysters that would be difficult to sell anyway, and then reintroduce them into areas where there should be oyster beds, which have been decimated almost completely over the, you know, decades and decades and decades. So I've got like a lot of latitude. But then when they call and they say, do you want to do a Zoom interview with the cast members of Everybody Loves Raymond for a reunion show for something, you know, da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So I'm like, yeah, really, please. I'm ridiculously blessed and fortunate.
Well, and you've worked a long time to get to this position.
Yeah, but if you're a sour Calvinist like me, if you grew up a sour Calvinist like me, you don't believe it. You deserve any of it. So,
well, hopefully that just heightens the gratitude then.
Oh, yeah, it's like that. Thank you for being there on the radio. And I so appreciate the opportunity to get a chance to have this conversation with you.
Well, you do come back to Iowa not irregularly.
Normally, I'm in Iowa 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times a year.
Now, for people
they know me at the rental car counter. This is not a joke.
Well, and for people who aren't familiar with the world of Central College, I mean, you've really maintained a very close relationship with your alma mater. Tell me about that.
Well, I've been on the board forever. How do I say this? I had a very good senior year playing football in high school in suburban Chicago, and I turned down a real-life scholarship to play for a guy named Ron Skipper at Central College zillions of years ago, and I was not a particularly good high school student, I'll say that, but once I got to Central, it was like all the tumblers went over, all the lights went on, and I exploded in terms of my hunger and thirst for learning. And I credit the institution for that. So as a result, I've been on the board forever. They're my number one source of whatever charitable donations I make. And I think we still do a really good job of taking kids who are hungry to learn and taking them up, taking them further steps up the ladder. I think we still do a really good job of that.
And I've also heard you dabble in a little bit of sports announcing.
Well, listen, that's a good story. Well, I don't know if it's a good story or not, or worth even sharing.
I want to hear it.
Well, my broadcast career started at the college radio station, and I started to write commercials for the KNIA AM station that was in Pella in Knoxville, and including for D&D Pump and Pipe, which still exists, by the way. And I soon then was invited to join the late, great local veterinarian, Doc Crawford, to do play-by-play, I do color on girls' high school basketball games. And back then, KNIA was a daytime station, so we would take our woolen sack, reel-to-reel tape recorder to the gyms that were gyms/auditoriums in rural Iowa and set it up on the stage and do broadcast the games into the tape recorder, and they would replay them the following afternoon.
So, and
true story. True story. I think we got $5 a game.
Wow. When you get back to Iowa.
And back
Iowa.
Then, beer was a quarter a draft. So you would spend a portion of your hard-earned, sports casting dollars, or quarters, I should say, in the taverns in rural Iowa after the game. It was a raucous time.
And you still do a little color commentary when you come back during football season?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, I crawl into the booth from time to time. They allow me into the broadcast booth for the Central College Dutch football games. And how do I say this? I've even perhaps once or twice an expletive has escaped my my lips during particularly dramatic moments. But I'm not sure how long that invitation is going to stay open, quite frankly.
So we are at an interesting point in history, a difficult time, of course. You've lived through this pandemic in New York City. We're living through it in Iowa. And there are so many other difficult things happening. We have, police violence against people of color and this burgeoning social movement. We've had, in Iowa, a terrible storm. It's been a really hard year. And for students, this is a really hard time. And I know you talk to young people when you come back. Do you have some words of wisdom for young people who are taking their classes online in their dorm rooms or in their bedrooms at home trying to go to junior high and high school and maybe feeling a little helpless right now?
Wow. It becomes an interesting time for me. I'll just talk about what happened to me personally. We've had a house outside the city for almost 30 years. It's 50 miles as the crow flies north. And especially, I think, if you're in Iowa, maybe you're not on that that incredible regimen schedule that you would normally be. And what I have found up here is I'm so much more tuned into nature here than I am every day in the city. Because every day in the city, I'm walking through concrete back and forth to work every day, or I'm on an airplane two or three or four times a week. And here, like this morning, I observed the male and female adult swans with their two surviving, well, they're not really cygnets anymore, but there were seven
teenagers
to begin with, and now they're just two.
Yeah.
Now they're just two. And they're almost fully grown, and they're almost all white. And I've watched them every day since, April? Beginning of May? So, and I'm looking at the leaves turning outside right now, and I'm, you know, the barn swallows left already on Labor Day, and all these things that I've tuned into that I wouldn't be tuned into otherwise.
That gives you some hope. But we are out of time, Harry Smith.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you so much.
You wanted a little button, and I gave you another speech. I'm so sorry.
Thank you so much, Harry Smith.
It has been my absolute pleasure, Charity. Thank you so much. I hope we can do it again.
Yes, please.
If you're not fired as a result of this.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.